Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is Cestine Duckworth. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, Cestine Duckworth.
Welcome, everyone, to Living Vertical Radio. This program is A Taste of Ink Live, where we introduce authors to our audience worldwide. I'm your host, Celeste Duckworth, and thank you to our sponsored ad, One Sure Sign Notary in Frisco, Texas. Remember, if you mention Vertical, you'll get a $5 discount on any notary service. Well, 2 weeks, we'll be able to access Living Vertical Radio that is now syndicated, and we are running a special on advertising for any companies or businesses that may be interested in celebration of our syndication. We are giving 25% off on our 15-second or 30-second podcast commercials. You can contact us at info@verticallifemagazine.com for details. Vertical, V-E-R-T-I-K-A-L, lifemagazine.com. Today we have a thrilling book and author we are interviewing for you today. The book is The Woman Underwater, and which is kind of timely now. You guys know I love this time of the year. Halloween's coming up, but we've had a lot of water issues and we've had discoveries underwater. So it's like, oh, I can't wait to interview our guests. So her book, The Woman Underwater, starts out with "No one disappears without a trace." I really like that. And so today, our guest is author Penny Goat Jin. She's an award-winning novelist, writes murder mysteries and suspense novels where the settings play as prominent a role as the engaging characters. A self-proclaimed eccentric known for writing late into the night, transfixed by the allure of flickering candlelight, Penny embraces the writing process unaware that what will confront her at the next turn. She rides the journey with her characters, often as surprised as her readers to see how the story unfolds. And she's fascinated with the paranormal and usually weaves a subtle, unexpected twist into her stories. When her husband was asked how he feels about his wife writing murder mysteries, he answered with a wink, "I sleep with one eye open." I like that. She's a proud member of Mystery Writers of America and Sisters in Crime, and Penny splits her time between Charleston, South Carolina, and Connecticut. So let me introduce to you my audience, Penny Goat Jin, the author of Woman Underwater. Welcome, Penny. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing great, and I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, we love having you here. Your book, interviewing you for your book is coming at a timely time because I just love to do these suspenseful thrillers during the Halloween season.
Yes, it is very timely, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. And my TV is always set for any channel that's just playing old time scary movies. So that's my inspiration for the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So do you that year round?
I do it year round, but I really kick into it during the Halloween season. And, you know, it's just kind of a family thing that during the weekends of this month, we would get together and just, you know, sleep over and watch all the scary movies we know and eat popcorn and do our little reviews on each one.
Oh,
so
that's great.
It's a fun time. It's a fun time for us. Yeah, it's a fun time for us. So
sounds like it.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, I just have a lot to ask you about your passion for writing and more about your book and your journey as a writer. So tell me, when did you know writing was your passion?
I think when the first book got published, I mean, I've always loved to paint and draw and write. I've always been very creative. I didn't pursue writing in college. I chose a very practical major. I chose accounting because I really needed to get a job out of school. But once I got out of school, I went back and, you know, started painting again and, you know, allowed myself to do all those fun things, that, you know, the right side of the brain. And then eventually there was, but I also think I had to live a little bit before I started writing. You know, I don't think I could have started writing any of these mysteries, you know, in my 20s, because I really hadn't been out there and been beaten up enough or lived enough to really have, you know, experiences to draw on. So I'm glad it worked out this way. But it wasn't until, you know, my kids were, you know, a little older and more self-sufficient and so forth that I just had this, what I thought was going to be a short story just kind of floating around in my head that I was playing with. And, you know, I'd be, you know, if I was driving in the car a long distance or, you know, taking a shower or whatever, and I had time to myself, I would start focusing on it. And I very quickly decided it was going to be a murder mystery because I love murder mysteries. And I had the setting picked out, and I started working on characters, and I had all these details in my head, and I thought, I probably should start writing some of this down. It might be a fun short story. So I would take a pad of paper with me when I would, you know, take the, you know, the kids to, you know, soccer practice, and I'd be waiting, or hockey practice, or my daughter's dance class, and I'd sit outside, and I'd just jot down all the things that I'd been thinking of, and then at night, when everybody else had gone to bed, I'm the night owl, so I would stay up and I'd take my notes out and I'd just start writing. And it was really just the love of writing. I know I was, in my mind, no one was going to read it. It was just going to be a short story that I would probably print out and shove in a drawer, never to be seen by anybody else's eyes. But when I got done, it was kind of long, and I thought, I wonder if it's long enough to be a book, and, you know, wonder if someone would want to publish it. And, you know, I knew enough about the industry that I had to, you know, send out query letters to publishers and agents and so forth. It took me 3 years, and I did find a publisher. And then once that got published, it just kind of opened the floodgates, and then I had all these other stories in my head that were demanding to be written. So it was kind of a, you know, later in life discovery that, you know, maybe this is something that I can do, and the feedback has been amazing from readers and so forth. So that's what keeps me going.
So where did the idea for A Woman Underwater come from?
Well, a lot of my storylines, I often will, you know, they'll come from me asking myself, what if, you know, what if I were in that situation, whether it's a, you know, a new story that something traumatic has happened, or maybe an acquaintance that, you know, something has happened. And I try to put myself in the person's shoes that it's happening to. And I just, and I say, what, you know, what would I be doing right now? What would I be feeling? What would I be thinking? So that's usually where, you know, my storylines come from. But it was also, you know, I had a lot of Connecticut readers because I, you know, used to come, I'm originally from Connecticut, and I had a lot of Connecticut readers saying, when are you going to set a story in Connecticut? Like, oh, well, sure, I could do that. So, and it just happened to be the right timing for doing that. And so it just, you know, I started, you know, thinking about all the places that I love in Connecticut and the settings there, because settings are very important in my books. I usually set the setting first, and then from there the storyline comes into place. So so it was kind of fun looking around of all the places, iconic places that I wanted to include in the story, and, you know, all the places that I, you know, have fallen in love with all the years that I lived there. So it just kind of started to fall into place through all of that.
Right. You know, when you're saying Connecticut, I know growing up in Ohio, we grew up in a little small town in Ohio, and it just kind of reading your book just really kind of reminded me. I mean, the town is probably what you would see if you're going up north in Massachusetts or Maine or anywhere up in there. So it was a nice little memory, but it was also a lot of mystery in that little town. You know, when you're growing up, you know, you're like, okay. And I know that, and that's why I say when I got your book, I was like, okay, this is interesting, because they were draining the street, you know, getting ready to enlarge the roadway nearby, and there was a big lake nearby. And while they were doing that, they found a car that had been, like, under the water.
Wow.
And the thing was that it was a lady and her daughter, and the thing was it was somewhere in 1950s when she went missing. And the family thought they had just kind of went away and didn't come back. You know, did all the investigation and everything, never found or anything, and just kind of, you know. So when they were doing the construction and they were built, you know, making the road wider, that came up, and it was like,
wow.
So yeah, so you know, so when you're talking about all these little, you know, small towns, and we read these little, you know, things, it's like, wow, that just brought up so many memories. You know, the things that you find, you know. So what was your biggest challenge, though, writing this book?
The biggest challenge? Probably just, you know, staying on task, you know, staying, you know, as they say, keeping, you know, your butt in the chair and writing it. But I don't usually have a problem doing that. I usually enjoy, you know, because I write, as they say, from the seat of my pants. You know, fiction writers are either planners, and they, you know, write outlines and have things planned out from start to finish, and then the rest of us are pantsers. We write from the seat of our pants, and, you know, I might have a general, you know, gist to the story, but then the fun for me is seeing, you know, how the story develops and where the characters take me. So I just let the characters pull me along, which is nice. But I don't know that I really had any challenges, and again, the fun part is the writing. Once you send it off to the editor, then the work begins. then it's not as much fun, I don't know that I really had any challenges writing it.
It's interesting that you kind of allow the book to kind of take you some places. You're not many authors. I mean, I've had authors that said, oh my God, the book, it was just a struggle between me and the book of where I wanted to go, you know, because we know that authors will say that, you know, I'm writing it and all of a sudden, you know, the characters are saying, no, go this way, or the book is saying, no, go this way. So it's interesting that you kind of enjoy letting that happen. So are you a little bit more discipline when that happens, or you just really just kind of let it flow?
I let it flow because, you know, I definitely let it flow because, you know, there was one time that I did try to write a synopsis or an outline ahead of time. I thought, you know, I'm going to be more efficient with my writing. I'm going to, you know, really plan it all out. So then when I sit down, I can write even faster. you know, I had this idea in my head, so I did it. And it was uncomfortable. It was almost painful writing out this outline and the synopsis and everything. But then when I actually went to sit down and write it, I struggled because my brain thought I'd already written the story because I knew what was happening to finish, and that wasn't any fun. You know, that my brain was ready to go on and do something else. So early on, you know, I did, after like the first book was published, I did kind of question myself, like, am I cutting corners by not writing an outline like some authors do? Am I, should I be, you know, taking the time? And then I read an interview with Stephen King, and he's a pantser. You know, that's how he writes. So I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
I think if Stephen King can write that way, I think I'm okay too. So that was the last
right.
time I tried to change. You know, I was trying to change what came naturally to me, and that was I was making more work for myself, and it was a real struggle. So I think as a writer, you have to really figure out what works for you. And some have to write an outline. I remember writing outlines in English class in school, and it was so painful. I just wanted to write the story, you know. But you have to find what works for you.
Oh yeah, I get that. The creative writing teacher tried to get me to change my major to English, and I'm like, not on your life. I had taken so many English classes, and by the time I got to college, I was not a happy camper to want to take one more English class.
Yeah.
So, and you're right. It's very pain. It's very, very painful.
Yeah,
I really prefer the creative writing type, you know, but I did have teachers that would say to me, we really like the paper, but we need you to be a little less creative and a little bit more technical. I was like, okay.
Oh, dear.
killed me having an English major. I was like, we're not going to do that. So you did an interview that I read of your, you interviewed your character. And it was really, really a great interview. It was really interesting. I hadn't seen anyone really do that. How did you do your character development, especially with Victoria? How did you develop that character? Is it, you know, is it from the same thing, you just kind of letting that come? Are there any elements of you or elements of, you know, things that you have been inspired by?
Well, I think every character that an author writes has at least a little bit of the author in them. Of course, that's kind of unsettling when you're writing villains as well as protagonists and so forth. But Victoria definitely has a lot of me in her. So that was where I started with her. But I also have this kind of a survey that I do with my characters, at least, you know, the main core of characters in a story. And it's just, I answer all these questions. I have like 15 pages of questions that I go through and answer for each character down to, you know, what they like to drink, who their enemies are, what's the favorite thing, piece of clothing in their closet and why, you know, just all kinds of questions. And once I get done answering those, I have a pretty good idea who the character is, but they also develop along with the story so that, you know, I discover more about them depending, you know, how they react to other characters or interact with other characters, how they react to situations. So I do start with a kind of a little basis, but then they do develop quite nicely. And now the interview that you were mentioning, was that the one with Victoria and then her mother kind of barges in and takes over? Yeah, that was a fun one to write. Because her mother, Millie, is such a character. She's the comedic relief in this suspenseful story. And I really had fun creating her. And she actually was from a couple of real people that I had interacted with, and I just combined the two people that, at least the perceptions of the two people that I had, and just kind of went from there. And I've had more people talk about Millie and you know, And I had one advance reviewer say she enjoyed Millie so much that she thought Millie should have her own book, her own story, that, you know, the next book.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting.
Well,
but
you know,
characters
that's a
are fun
now.
Yeah, it is.
That is a thought. Yeah, that's a thought. So having grown up exposed to, exposed to the paranormal, your fascination with ghosts and hauntings, can you tell me why you weave subtle threads into your novels?
Well, it's just something I've always enjoyed. I grew up in a family that believed in the paranormal, and my grandmother's house up in Maine, it was where I had my first paranormal experience. But before I had my own experience, I heard all the stories that went on in the house. And up until my experience, they were just stories, and they were very entertaining stories, you know, and it seems like they were all, you know, family members that had passed on, but they were quite active and you know, full body, you know, apparitions type of thing, you know. So it wasn't until I was in, finishing college, and I did one summer, I was a camp counselor up in Maine, and I just happened to get a job at a camp 20 minutes from my grandmother's house. So on the night before our day off, I would go and stay overnight with her. And I think it was the first night I was there was when I had the first experience. And it actually kind of terrified me. And I kind of put up a wall, you know, a mental wall that, no, I don't want that to happen anymore. I don't want to, you know, step into that world. But after a while, maybe a year or two, I said, okay, I'm interested. I want to, and then I opened myself back up to being, you know, susceptible to paranormal. So I've had quite a few experiences. So it's something that I've always, you know, I've loved to read about it. And now that I have, you know, all kinds of experiences, it's kind of a natural thing for me to weave into a story. But it's not the kind of thing that, you know, I hit people over the head with it, because not everybody gets it or, you know, or believes in it or is interested in it. So it's more of a subtle, you know, just to put one more layer of in the story. But I just, I love doing it. And it just kind of happens naturally. I don't even have to think about, okay, how am I going to do it in this story? It just happens. It's just kind of a natural thing that I guess I'm always thinking about. So it just happens.
Yeah, I grew up with that too, and my I think I'm the only one that will not watch scary movies late at night. And I'm like, no, because I'm like, I want my mind to be clear when I go to sleep, you know. And I have a friend who they actually are stewards of a castle in Ireland, and I went to visit them one year, and there was a lot of people, you know, touring. And so they would say to me, Celeste, go take this tour up there. And I'm like, I'm not taking anybody on the ghost tour. I'm not going to do the ghost tour. Because this castle really, it had a dungeon too, you know. And I'm like, I'm really not going to do the ghost tour.
You're a smart woman.
Find somebody else to do that one. Yeah. Well, one of the things, though, that seems to be one of the things I felt like in your book was the whole thing about the strength of love and the power of that to, you know, push people into action or hang on to hope. Is that something that you really like to have that element in your books?
Apparently I do. I don't even think I knew I was doing it until this one, when I was really thinking about talking points and so forth. When I thought back to my previous books, I could identify a recurring theme there with the strength of love. And I think, you know, it's just kind of part of life that, you know, when people – love can compel you to do things that maybe you didn't think you could accomplish. And you can – stand, you know, strong in the face of adversity, so I guess I like my characters to do that, and certainly Victoria did, you know, she, and certainly without love, that's, you know, it's, you know, people often they lose faith. You know, they maybe their life's ambitions slip away, and they might even resort to self-destructive actions. But Victoria, she is, you know, she's a strong strong woman, and even in the face of adversity, she stays strong because of the love for her, with her husband. And you know, she, you know, he's disappeared. It's been, you know, when the book opens, he's been gone for mm-hmm. 7 years, and she's got everybody around her trying to convince her that, you know, it's time to move on, and it's something must have happened, and he's not coming back. But she mm-hmm. won't give up. She believes he's out there. And, you know, and one of the reasons she does believe that is every year on her birthday, she gets the most beautiful coral-colored roses. And that was something that her husband started when they were first married. And she continued mm-hmm. to receive them even after he disappeared. So she thinks that's a sign from him that he's still out there and that he'll return when it's safe to do so. So she's, you know, her love for her husband keeps her strong, and even with everyone around her saying, "Come on, let's you know face reality here, and you know it's time to move on for her sake and for the sake of her two boys."
Mm-hmm. Oh wow! So you also have a lot of strong female characters in your story. So tell me, you know. What is something, this is a question I want to ask you. What is something that you don't like about Victoria?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, she does have a couple of male, you know, a couple of quarters that she, you know, she kind of gives into. She's kind of showing a weak side of herself that she needs a man in her life. So I guess mm-hmm. that's the piece I don't particularly care for. But you know, all characters have flaws, just like we do
right.
in real life. But she's still a strong character, and I really do like my protagonists to be strong female characters. I mean, I like reading books like that, and I like, you know, mm-hmm. movies with a strong female. And I, the whole idea of, you know, the damsel in distress, or even worse, the victim, the female victim. I don't know. I don't enjoy that. So I don't write that. And I think you're right. I think Victoria may have just slightly, maybe she was kind of inching toward the whole damsel in distress thing. You know, falling for. Mm-hmm. You know, who she fell for. But, you know,
right.
I think overall, I think she is a very strong character. And I do put my strong female protagonist through a lot. I mean, you know, by the time they come out the other side, you know, they're, you know, I put them through, you know, they've gotten bumps and bruises, perhaps broken bones and, you know, maybe a concussion or two. I mean, kind of like life. We, you know, they get, the characters get put through there. But they do come out the other side even stronger. But I have been known to, when I do talk, I often do publicly apologize for what I put my protagonist through, just because it's a lot. But, you know, that's just part of life and part of the story, so...
Well, I too like strong female roles, and actually... I love that in the last couple of years, there's been more action movies around females, and I really like that. I really do.
Yeah.
So even, you know, you're right. There's always something that you see like, yeah, I don't really like that part. But for the most part, you know, I really do like that. When I had my younger daughter, I purposely gave her the name of a story of a female hero in a story I had read. And my thought process was, I want my daughter to be fearless like this woman, you know? I named her. So she'll also say, "Mom, where'd you get my name from?" It's like, book. I'm like, "I'm sorry, I didn't name you after anyone in the family."
There's nothing wrong with that. That's a great reason to, you know, to name her that.
Right.
I have a daughter too, and I, you know, I brought her up to be a, you know, strong, independent, you know, self-confident woman. And so I don't want to be writing books that don't portray that, you know. I guess I think I think the, you know, girls need to be reading stories that are strong female characters. So absolutely, I'm right there with you on that.
So I like to ask some questions on writing, because we do have a lot of our audience are new writers or young writers, and I like them. I like to give them the real deal about writing.
So, sure, absolutely.
Tell me, are you, when you're writing, do you have a set time that you stop writing, or do you just keep writing because you're feeling that, yeah, this is just a good time for me to get this part out, or are you a little bit more disciplined?
Well, I don't have a strict schedule on like time of day that I write, or and what I have found works for me is a word count. Some writers, they use they'll say, okay, I'm going to write for 2 hours, and whatever I get after 2 hours is what I get. I find I'm much more productive if I have a word count. But it, I could be writing, you know, at midnight. It could be 4 a.m. I'm kind of all over the place. But my rule is if I wake up, once I've gone to bed, and once I, you know, if my eyes are open at some point, you know, again, it could be 4 a.m, my rule is I have to go downstairs and find my computer and start writing. But it's a great time of the day to do it because, you know, it's quiet. You can get a lot done. I may need a nap later, but I'll do that. But then other times I'll write in the evening if I can fit it in. But, you know, and if it is flowing and I have a lot that I want to get out, I will, you know, if I have time to do it, I will keep writing. Otherwise, I might just jot some notes down of what I want to, you know, continue with the next time I sit down. I think each writer has to figure out what works for them. And, you know, again, like sometimes, you know, some people have to do a outline. They can't work without an outline, and that just paralyzes me. So I've figured out that it's a word count. It's, you know, I get the gist of the story down, at least, you know, in the beginning, and then see where it takes me. So it's a fun process for me, really.
And
I think also the key is to allow yourself to write poorly. You know, it doesn't have to be pretty, you know, right out of the gate. Just get the story down, you know. And some people have a hard time doing that because they want to keep going back and edit it. But you spend so much time editing that you're not advancing the story. So what I advise, and I do this too, because there's this fear, I think, of someone getting a hold of your rough draft before it's ready for someone to see it. It's a legitimate fear, you know? So what I do is before I start writing a new rough draft is I type at the top in bold letters, all capitals, I say, note, this is a rough draft. Any attempt to construe it as anything else will be met with dire consequences.
Oh, I love that.
And then that gives me license to write poorly and just to get the story down, you know. And then what I'll do is I'll put it, once it's down, I will put it aside, and, you know, as long as I can stand to not touch it. And then I go back and I start at the beginning and start doing the rewriting and so forth. And the longer you can put it to the side, the more you're never going to be objective about your own work, but you can bring a fresher perspective to it the longer it has sat idle. So then I go back in and do the rewriting and self-editing and that sort of thing, and get it to the point where I think I've made it the best I can be. It can be, and then I send it to the editor. So it's quite a process, but the key is to get the story down. If you don't get the story down,
really,
you have nothing. You've got nothing to edit if you don't have the story down. So that's the key.
That's very good advice, because I know some people that are just so hung up on the grammar and the correct spelling. And when I did my first manuscript, it was hilarious. I had to submit it to get into a creative writing class in college. And I remember the instructor said to me, he said, I'd give you an A for the story, but I'd give you an F for the grammar. And I was like, you know what?
Oh.
I'll take that. But the funny thing was, because he told me the same thing you just said. He said, all I want you to do in class is just keep writing the story. And I'm like, okay, cool. But what was the hilarious part is like maybe a couple of years I pulled that manuscript out. And I was starting to do the editing on it. And I read through it and I was, oh, my God. Like some of these words are not even the right words.
Mm-hmm.
And I always laugh about that, but I like what you said about that. Just write the story, because I think you get hung up. I think you get hung up and you lose some of your story if you're so involved in how it looks and you're not even finished with the story.
Right. Exactly. You're getting ahead of yourself. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think, you know, the whole grammar thing may be on the left side of the brain, whereas you need to be on the right side of the brain to be creative and just, and you know, writing the story, getting it down. So you can't keep crossing back and forth, you know. So
That's true. Now, the big part question I want to ask you, and this is something I hope a lot of my audience is listening to, because you know I always ask the author about this. What was your experience with editing?
You mean when I sent it to the editor, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll tell you, the first time I sent a manuscript to an editor, I don't think I breathed. I held my breath until it came back. You know, I was sure I wasn't going to recognize it because you hear all the horror stories that, you know. And the first thing that the editor did, I had written that story with a prologue and an epilogue, because I love reading books like that. And the first thing she did was eliminate the prologue and the epilogue, and I was crushed. Oh my gosh! So I really, and it took me a couple days to kind of recover from that. And then I thought, okay, Penny, you know, she's a professional. She knows what she's doing. Just go with it. Well, it turns out she was absolutely right, because I had it too neatly tied up with the prologue and epilogue. It didn't allow for a sequel, or much less a series. And now I've got so far three in that series. But the funny thing is that this, with The Woman Underwater, I sent it to the editor, and the first pass, you know, the first pass is always the most. She has the most pages of comments and corrections. But the first pass, she came back and said, I think that the first chapter should be a prologue and the last chapter should be an epilogue. I was thrilled because I finally got my prologue and epilogue. But she was right. That there's a different voice in the first chapter and the last chapter. So I was thrilled to finally get that. But I think you really do have to trust your editor and listen to him or her, because they are professionals. They know what they're doing. They can, their objective, they can be objective in, you know, looking at your work.
Yes.
You cannot be objective.
Yes.
And sometimes it's hard to, you know, if they want to, you know, take things out, or if they want you to expand on this character's personality or whatever it is, but it's all, they're there to help you make your manuscript the best that it can be. So it is a lot of work, but it's so important to in order to have your novel be the best that it can be.
Absolutely. You're right about that. And that's the great thing. And I always suggest that individuals not try to edit the book themselves, but you know, put that investment, that value into your book and have someone else edit it for you. It's just a priceless experience, I think it is.
I agree, And not just any person to edit it. I mean, it needs to be a professional editor, not your next-door neighbor who, you know, maybe was the editor of the high school, you know, yearbook or whatever. Have it, you know, really invest the money and have it be a professional editor.
So, Penny, based on just your experience, you know, in the books that you've written, what do you think? Just give me one thing you think a person needs to be a successful writer.
Well, I think you need to constantly be working on improving your craft. I think that's something that Stephen King talks about. He's got a book out called On Writing, and it's it's part memoir, part how-to, and he has some great advice in there, so I guess I'd recommend that as well. But the one thing he says, you know, is keep working on your craft. Keep getting better at what you do. And part of that is just is writing, but also, you know, working with your editor. But it's also reading, too. You know, you can be a better writer the more you read. So I think that was that would be what I would say, that, you know, just keep working on getting better at it.
Absolutely. I think that's a great one to tell individuals, too. I always when I do the interviews, I always try to encourage people. These interviews are not about how a person, you know, how good of a writer is. The interviews are to introduce storytellers and also to introduce to individuals who may be thinking about writing, just to share the journey, just to share the journey. And I hope that this is something that we do on this radio show, is that we share the journey, because I, you know, a lot of people we meet, just if I think about all the different ways that people became writers, it's just really interesting. It's no, you know, some mostly the individuals I've interviewed are not, didn't start out being writers.
So, yeah.
You know, just it's just always interesting. You know, you never know where a story will come from and what you might be doing when that story hits you. But I've seen writers come from all over. And it's been really, really a joy to do this work. So, Penny, I want to I want the audience, I want all of you to know Penny's website is PennyGoatGen.com, and that's spelled GOETJEN.com. You can go to her website and see more of what she's doing, more of her writing. Her book, The Woman Underwater, is now available at Amazon. So we will make sure we provide those links for you. So, Penny, thank you for being on A Taste of Ink Live today. We really enjoyed your book and enjoyed talking to you about some of the in and outs. It's funny that you mentioned Stephen King, because he's one of my favorite writers, but Stephen King can be so brutal.
I know.
We always say that. We say, oh, my God, he can be so brutal. But, he's one of my favorites. I'm always I love the stuff he puts out. But I also love his passion for information and helping others. So what we'll do is that, you know, you'll be able to hear more of this interview on our sites and on the radio and on Vertical Life Magazine. We'll have all the links for you on how to be able to be in touch with Penny and her social media links. And Penny will be sending you a little note in a day or two to just give you the where the links will be. So if you want to share those links with your fans and family.
That sounds great. Thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And good luck on your next book. And we'll be in touch, because I want to see what the next book is. We'll be in touch and have you on again about your next book.
I'd love to. That sounds great. Thank you. Thanks so much, Phyllis.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, Cystine Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalwithak.mediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh, books that make you scream, books that make you hope, and books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are at BooksThatMakeYou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. place if you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.